And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 693. We're going to talk some 2024 projections recap. We did this episode last year, seeing how good the projections were, how accurate the projection was. Probably much more professional terms to use on this, and I'm pretty sure my co-host here will let me know what they are. Let's put it that way. I was going to use a lot of weird words there. We'll say he'll let me know what I'm misspeaking here. But we're going to talk about, you know, some guys that overachieved, underachieved, but how the projections maybe lined out. Some guys that, you know, we use projections in the preseason to kind of help with our rankings and other things. So how accurate were they is a big part of our drafting success, one might say. So we'll talk about that and probably take some rabbit holes in other directions, talking about players along with those projections. But first off, you can find me on Twitter at BDIntric and my co-host as at least once a week here on this show on Twitter at BreakingBen_T. Ben Tid, how we doing, my friend?
Doing great, Bubba. As I mentioned before, the Yankees lost the lead right before I hopped on. But that's all right, though. It's still early. It's only 2-1. Other than that, doing well. Like you said, we did this last year. I enjoyed doing the show. The projection review, it's important for me since I rely on them so heavily, as most listeners probably know by now. And yet, I mean, the forecast accuracy is good enough for me. So you don't have to worry about anything too technical.
Yeah, no, it's great because Ben, we walked through the sheet that Ben made before the show, and he could have probably went down a million different rabbit holes on me, but we just kept it simple in my world and said, hey, if I can figure this out, then most of the listeners will be okay. And we'll go from there. But it's just always fun because, like Ben mentioned, he's heavy into projections. For those earlier in my show days, Toby, obviously a massive projections guy. A lot of players use projections. I love using projections, like especially if I'm like on a tiebreaker, I'm trying to figure things out. I love them. And, you know, as projection season comes along, Ben, we'll talk about it on the show. And because I know everyone has their quote unquote projections they like more than others type thing. But we'll kind of talk about how we think they line up, where outliers might be, so on and so forth. Because I know we did that last year. We did the recap show. And then we also did another one like projections. These guys stand out compared to like what you were looking at along those lines when you start calculating things out. So it's just fun because if we're going to utilize these things and rely on them so much, kind of want to know how accurate they are. It's kind of a big deal about like on what we're doing here. And there are some very big brains like Jeff Zimmerman and others. They do a lot of work on kind of validating who was the best and who was this and who was that. And most of the same names come to the top of the list more often than not. That's why they are the guys, but we'll talk about them here. Before we get started, Ben, what projections are we using? Are we using a grouping of projections? What are we focusing on here?
Yeah, these are the ones I actually use for my drafting purposes, the exact same ones. I pulled them out from my other 2024 workbook, and it is Steamer, BatX, and ATC, evenly averaged together.
Evenly averaged together. Okay, perfect. That's good to know. Because and for those that are keeping track at home, it might be new to projections, which Fine. Be surprised listening to my show if you're new to projections, but cool. ATC, Errol Cohen, he makes kind of a grouping and then puts his secret sauce into it and goes along those lines. The Bad X, Derek Carty, he uses StatCast in his, which is big, and a couple other things. I'm obviously minimalizing these, no offense to these people. And then you have Steamer, who's been one of the OGs in this landscape for a long, long time. They're one of the first ones to come out. And they have their own mix of the pie as well. If you want to elaborate on that, you're more than welcome to, Ben, but I was trying to keep that short and sweet.
No, that's pretty good. There's so many to choose from, and I'll reference a tweet that I saw the other day. And on that tweet, there's a bunch of others listed out that you could even look into. Their Zips, there's DC, there's, I think it's like the Fangraphs has their own. There's regular the bat, which is less Statcast oriented. It has just more traditional inputs, I believe. But yeah, that was a pretty good summary. And we're only doing hitters too. I don't do the as in-depth of a review with pitchers because I don't usually use projections as much for pitchers. Yep. I'll use them for like ranking them to see, okay, who's the best ranked pitcher, but I don't really care exactly what the stats will really look like because it's kind of, I think it's hard to project pitchers out.
So. Yeah. And out of that list Ben mentioned and the ones we're using in his grouping here, these are all free sources. There are a lot of projections they get to pay for that are very good, but these are the free sources. So kind of makes it easy for everyone to utilize. And also, as Ben mentioned, and we'll mention this throughout the entire preseason on pretty much any time I talk about projections on a show, no matter what show I'm on, we rarely use pitching, as Ben said, because it's so hard to predict innings pitch, and that fluctuates every other statistic you're projecting, where at least batters, the big brains like Ben and others have become smart enough when they can look at things and kind of look at playing time, and the playing time dictates at bats, and at bats dictate, you know, X, Y, and Z in the projection. That is so far much more doable compared to pitching. Pitching you can still do, but not to the same extent. It's like Ben's a basketball guy. Basketball, you can almost be like, okay, he's going to get 32 minutes. I mean, he's going to be like this amount of assists, points. Like you have a good idea, basically. So same with baseball. Okay, this guy's going to be hitting second. He's going to play 150 games. Well, here's his at-bats. Like you can kind of play that game in your head, and that way you can kind of calculate things out. That's probably more than anybody cared to know. That's why hitting's a lot easier to plan out along the way there, because you might get gombered, and that'll screw up a whole projection of a pitcher in no time. So there you go. All right, Ben, when we're looking at the sheet, I know I'm going to reference it a lot, and it's going to be annoying to people, but if you're listening, we'll get you covered here on this sheet here. We got a couple things we're going to look at before we look at some players, kind of line out just so the listeners can visualize kind of what we're going to be utilizing to talk about here when looking at this sheet.
Sure. And there's a couple other points I'll make after I do that before we hop into the player review. But so what I sent Bubba was a spreadsheet that has my personal rankings in there. It has the NFBC main event ADP for all main events. There's no cherry picking dates. Like there's no latest event drafts. It's every single main event draft, all 57 ADP points. I have the projections for each player based on the three sources I've mentioned before. I have the actual stats for each player for this past season. I have columns that show the delta or the difference between the runs, homers, RBI, steals, and what I calculate is the weighted average. That's how I calculate my Z scores, because if you just use a face value average, an average is only as good as the number of bats that are behind it. So if you have a Arias with 600 at bats, he's having a greater impact on your team's average. But if you have someone who walks a lot with a lower average, then it'll hurt you as much because they're walking and there's fewer at-bats that go into the at-bat calculation or the average calculation. So that's why I use a weighted average, so that you get more of an impact on your team's average from that player. And then I also calculated, so I mentioned the Z-scores. So I calculate my own Z-scores for the rankings, for the projections and the actuals. So if anyone going listening were to go on to RazBall, for example, or Fangraphs Player Rater, which you and Ryan use a lot, it should be relatively similar order for the actual ranking versus what those sites have. It's just something that I do on my own. It's good practice, and it helps me see what part of the ranking is contributed by which stats. So we have the stats for the projections, the projection rankings, in terms of hitters, not, you know, pitchers include, like I said before. And then I also have the MAE of the projection versus the actual. So for anyone not familiar with MAE, it's mean absolute error. And it's just a forecasting metric that shows how accurate, in our case, the projection, which essentially is a forecast, was to what actually occurred. And there's a million ways that I was explaining above before we recorded how you could slice the data. You could go off of who had the highest MAE, which is bad, who had the lowest MAE, which is good in terms of how accurate the projection was. You can go off the big like rank differences. There's a ton of ways to cut it, but there's a lot here, and hopefully we'll be able to navigate it pretty easily. But I think we have a good grasp on what we have here.
Yeah, and it might sound like a lot, but literally Ben explained this to me pretty quickly, and I understood it. So that's pretty much all you need to know. Like, if I got this, we're good, folks. I'll keep this simple for you if you get lost in the weeds. So we'll make this happen for sure. But it's really cool, and again, love this exercise, because some of the players we're going to talk about, you know, maybe it seems like they didn't have a great year, but all things considered, we look at projections, how they finished. This is kind of the guy we thought they'd be. Or maybe they overproduced in a certain category, like they overdid the projections, vice versa, underdid, so on and so forth. So it's a really good kind of gauge on how things went when looking at it. You mentioned you had a couple more things you wanted to mention before talking players. So what else would you like to discuss before we get rocking and rolling?
Sure. I alluded to this earlier, and the tweet that I mentioned is Vlad Sedler at RotoGut on Twitter. The point of his tweet was to show how good his projections were. So good for you, Vlad. He had the most accurate according to his metrics. So good for you. He does his VDP. But the point that I wanted to take from what he tweeted was, so he had the total runs and RBI for the majors forecast for the projections and then the actual. And he calculated the percent difference. And the one thing that I noticed was how much higher all the projection totals were versus to what actually happened this past year. So Steamer, ATC, Depth Chart, the Bat X, they all over forecasted the amount of offensive production in terms of runs and RBI that we were supposed to have this past season. And that kind of ties into the next couple things I want to go over. So one thing, now that I've been in the NFBC for a few years now, I've seen people like Vlad tweet about this in the past, and I wanted to, once I realized the importance of it, I started keeping track for my own records. And that's the 80th percentiles for the DC and the main event. So the draft champions contest and the main event, both NFBC contests. And the 80th percentile, which I'm sure others have heard on not just Bubba's show, but other shows that's constantly talked about, is it's for the overall component of those contests. So if you're in the main event, you're trying to win the $200,000 grand prize, or it's, I think, 200 grand now. And a good measuring stick of how your team will be in that overall contest is if you can get roughly 80% of the stats, or the 80th percentile in runs, homers, RBI, steals, and average, and then all the pitching categories, there's a good chance you're competing for the overall. And so in my, I sent this to Bubba, so he has that for his doing as well. But I have 21 through 24 for the two contests, and I averaged the stats for the 80th percentiles for all 4 years for both of them. And then I compared the individual years to that average, and I put that as a percent. So for the DCs, for example, there were 1,026.5 runs over the, on average over the last 4 years for the 80th percentile. Over the last 4 years, the average 80th and homers was 291. And then for RBI, it was 997. And then the percents come in where for each year, I compare what actually happened that year versus the four-year average. In 2021, everything was, well, the runs were 3% higher, homers were 7% higher, and RBI were 2% higher. But then in 2022, it was 5% lower in runs, 8% lower in homers, 5% lower in RBI. Then 2023, it went back up to 3% in runs, actually 3% all across the board in those three stats. Mm-hmm. I omitted steals because of the boot, because the recent rules kind of skewed everything. And then this past season, we were back negative. So it was minus 1% in runs, minus 2 in homers, and minus 1 in RBI. So we have this pattern going of up, down, up, down. And I don't know what to do about it for next year because I think it's very meaningful. I mean, I did well in my hitting categories and across my teams this year. I don't know if that was just luck or I picked the right guys. But I'm wondering, okay, now we're going to 2025. Are we going to have an offensive season again? Because that's what these – like 4 years are showing me. I wish I had more data. I do have 2019, but that was pre-COVID and that was happy fun ball. So I kind of throw that year out as well. It's a much higher homer total than the other years, that's for sure. And runs an RBI higher too. But just something to keep about or think about as you go into next season is what's the environment going to be like? And I know the 80th percentiles that I mentioned here can probably describe what we saw in the majors, because I know people were complaining about offense being down start the year, and overall this past season the numbers were much lower than what we saw last year at least. And I'll pause. Go ahead.
I was saying this is very interesting to look at because, like you mentioned, 2022, that, you know, 5.5%, 8.5%, 5% drop off from the norm. You know, 971 runs scored, 266. Like, you just look at the numbers here, and my goodness, that is a massive drop off. Got the bounce back you mentioned in 23. And then this past year, like, it was closer to 2022, like you mentioned, with the negative numbers. So it's interesting to see the ups and downs. Other thing is, the stolen base advantages, that is a gigantic jump. Now, the last 2 years, basically identical numbers. That was very interesting to me, like 183, 186 in your 80th percentile. So that's basically the same. But to see that jump from the previous seasons before the rule changes was that's a massive, massive jump. And I know you mentioned it here is like a good part of the 80th percentile to correlate with the projections, because if you're using projections to build your team and you're trying to make your list, like you talked about in our two-part series about redoing your main event, you're kind of trying to get an idea of, you know, how you're projected to look statistically. Well, there's your 80th percentile, which your target was, we talked about on that show. So when these projections are off based on maybe just being off, or like you said, hey, this year's an offensive year, this one's a down year, which one's it going to be? Projections can't determine that. Now, most projections use at least a three-year average, which is a plus. But if it's now, if the new three-year average is going to be two down years and one good year, and that one of the down years was a drastically down year, now the way are the projections going to be on the flip side now? Like you said, everyone over-projected this year. Are they all going to under-project next year? I know it's kind of what you were saying, but I'm just opening up Pandora's box a little more here. What are we going to expect when we dive into it? And we're just looking back on 2024 projections today. We're not even looking at the 2025 yet because they're not out yet. But what else were you going to say on that? Because it just stood out looking at that chart while you were talking. Like, there's a lot going on here for like six numbers for each year, basically.
I'm glad you noticed it, and I'm glad you reemphasized it, because you said that very well. So thank you for that. And then this, so the next thing I wanted to go over, which kind of ties into our discussion for the show, is just a couple of examples of players that kind of support what I noticed. And it was funny, once I pointed them out to you, I realized two of them are quote unquote your guys, and this was not by it wasn't intended to be like that, and it's not negative by any means. It's funny how it kind of fell. But the first guy I wanted to mention was Ryan McMahon. He, and I know this is why you've loved him so much. You say, always say he's a steady Eddie, and this is pretty spot on. So he had, all three of these players actually had some of the lowest MAE scores, which means that the projections were most accurate for what they actually did in the season. With McMahon, so McMahon's different from the two, because McMahon had the same projected rank as his actual rank going by my Z-score calculation method. 117, the 117th hitter in both projections and what he actually did this past season, which is, he might be the only one like that. I'm glad I saw him, because this is a good example. And as the 117th projected hitter, that equated to 73 runs, 22 homers, 73 RBI, 7 steals, and a slightly negative average. I won't give the actual numbers. It doesn't really mean much to listeners, but it was below average of the sample. But when you compare it to what he actually did, McMahon only had 68 runs, so he had 5 fewer runs, 2 fewer homers, 8 fewer RBI, 3 fewer steals, and he was pretty comparable with the negative average. So everything was down except for the average, but he was exactly ranked exactly the same as the projection thought he would be. So if you see someone with down numbers, you think, hey, they finished worse than the projection, but because the environment wasn't as productive hitting-wise as we expected, he has a worse line, but he's just as valuable as the projection thought he would be. And then for the other two, Giancarlo Stanton and Mike Yastrzemski, they are examples of relatively accurate projections, but their ranks were significantly better based on what they actually did because of the reduced offensive environment. Stanton had a 3 MAE, which is very low, but he was projected to be the 177th hitter, was actually the 128th. So that's a 40-spot difference. He was better basically with the same line. And then Yastrzemski was the 212th projected hitter. He was actually 163rd. And so he jumped 50 spots with an MAE even better of 2. So Yastrzemski only was off by 2 runs, 1 homer, 1 RBI, and a steal. And he dropped 50 spots in the ranking, or he moved up 50 spots, excuse me. So if your team's struggling with hitting, it's not your fault.
Yeah, no, that's the best, the simplest way to kind of sum up what you were looking at there with Stanton and Yastrzemski. It's like, would anybody think Yaz is close to 150th overall hitter? No. But with the environment we had, with a lot of injuries, because a lot of the people that really underachieved, quote unquote, is because they didn't play, basically, which makes sense. That's simple logic. But there was a lot of that this year, a lot of injuries, just a lot of poor production. And so you got a guy like Yaz, who, even though he was hurt from time to time, still played enough that he's out there and produce. Like, maybe we rode him for about the last month of the season, leading off for the Giants, doing his thing. But to be 150th, I don't think many would have wagered that one. Let's put it that way. If I would have said, you know, at a bar, who do you think was Mr. 163 this year? I don't think Yaz would have been over the top 100 options on that list. So, pretty fun stuff in that regard. So what we're going to do here tonight is we're going to look at some of the ones that had the biggest differential between projection and actual rank. And then we're going to look at some of the biggest ones with the biggest MAE, the error involved there, to see, because like there's a couple that stood out. We talked about pre-show, just kind of scrolling through for fun. And it's like, wow, like it was a quiet season, but if you look at the numbers, it was actually really good compared to projections. Because again, could be the environment. That might be a thing we say a lot tonight because it's true. But you know, we get bored and, you know, not Gene Segura, and that they're boring and not producing. You plug in with other guys where you're just like, man, are they even doing anything? Like, they're in my lineup every week, but are they like actually doing, like, in a 15, you love these guys because you never have to worry about them. In a 12, are the kind of guys I'm looking at going, why am I rostering him right now? He's doing nothing. But then if you step back and if you look at it from this angle of the sheet, like, he's actually doing a lot compared to a lot of other options out there. So it's kind of a weird way to look at it, but we'll talk about some of them as well. So if you're ready, Ben, I'm going to filter a little here on one of these by all right, that was the wrong direction. There we go, Z to A. Okay, all right, the biggest rank differentials, which is I want to look at here, like on the positive side. Let's say positive for a little bit here, and you can throw in the MAE if you want to kind of justify if this was, you know, worthwhile or not before we actually do the actual MAE discussion. But the first player, Ben, when you look at the biggest rank differential, he's preseason projected rank was 258. Actual rank was 26th. And this is just funny to me because he was the top player on the player radar that did not get drafted in the first 11 rounds of the meatball draft. And he actually went like, I think around 16 or 17, didn't even get immediately drafted. Dude's an all-star. Jurickson Profar. Jurickson Profar. I think he's going to keep showing up on every chart as this overachiever, and no one's going to know what to do with him for 2025. Like, I think I've seen what most people want to do with him. But Profar was great. Like I mentioned, 258 to 26th. We saw 15 more home runs from 9 to 24. RBIs 43 to 85. 7 more steals up to 10 steals. 44 more runs, like just crushed everything, Ben. So what do you, when you look at this, and maybe you can dig into the deeper stuff if you want, but what are your thoughts on Profar, who was the highest ranked differential on this entire chart?
Well, one thing I noticed is that he wasn't drafted at all in the main event. He has zeros for his ADP and ADP ranks. So none of the main event drafters had him on their radars, and there's a lot of good players in the main event. That's saying a lot. The other thing is that his projected at-bats were much lower than his actual at-bats, and that's part of the reason why he did so well in the rank difference. He had 387 projected at-bats versus 564. That kind of, I'm sure that's more closely to 600 plate appearances. And but if you look at the projection, if you kind of don't double it, but if you maybe double it roughly just for our purposes, it's not, is like the runs are kind of close, the RBIs are kind of close, the homers are kind of low. So it looks like the they thought he had like the skills to be a decent player over at like on a per plate appearance basis. I think Steamer 600 would be interesting to see what his totals would have been over 600 at bats. That's another option too for projections. It's a good one. And I remember looking at him midseason, and I was not in on adding Profar, but now his Statcast is a lot of red there. Okay. For the season, and he could be a trap for next year. But if he didn't go early, I don't know what his ADP is to the other drafts that have.
I'm looking right now. His ADP is 256, and Ryan's in the chat here. Bloomfield saying he took him 19th in our meatball draft, 19th round.
That is a great pick, Ryan.
That is a good pick. And right now, ADP at 256, it's like that seems too low. He's going after other outfielders around him. Right behind him is Dalton Varsho, who just had shoulder surgery. Right ahead of him is Brendan Donovan. Willie Castro, Lourdes Gurriel, like Garrett Mitchell. Okay, I like Garrett Mitchell, but like that, but Garrett Mitchell and him was almost a 25 pick difference. Like, that's a lot of potential value, which people hate talking about, but that's what we do in the offseason.
Well, as it sticks now, I mean, he was hitting third for the Padres Profar, and he's a switch hitter, so he's playing full time. And Mitchell, as much as I like Mitchell, he's a platoon bat. I think you said Varsho, he's a platoon, he should be a platoon bat. So I think that Profar, as long as he continues to do anywhere close to this good, he should play all the time and probably will be productive. He'll definitely be more of a 15-team play, but, I mean, he had value in 12s for sure. It's one of those wild years that come out of nowhere. He's 31.
I was like, he's going to be 32 in February, so that does
– it's another tricky thing you got to consider.
Yep. Keeps your eyes on – like, Victor Robles is going 50 picks ahead of him right now. Like, Victor's awesome, but – we've been down on Victor for years, and it's like, are we going to believe a full season of Profar or a half season of Victor? Like, that's a fun conversation to have someday. But and that's the blessing and the curse of these early drafts. You can get some amazing values. You can also get stuck with some garbage. It just depends on how it works. But like a Profar, if we clipped this and listed it back in like March 1st, 256 might be a thing of our imagination at some like. So I guess just kind of how things work right now. All right, the next one here, and we actually have a listener question, we'll hit on him some more later, but I'll love to mention this one, is Brenton Doyle, because his preseason projection was ranking was 191, finished 27th right behind Profar, so 191 ranking differential. He had 9 more homers, 23 more RBIs, we had 27 runs scored, 12 stolen bases. Brenton Doyle was a beast. Many people were scared of the stolen bases, I mean the strikeouts, from that people saw in the short sample, but defense wins and the kid learned how to hit. So what are your thoughts on what we saw from Brenton Doyle versus the projections?
The big thing that stands out to me is the average. He went from being a very negative contributor in average to being a decently positive one. And the steals were kind of there. And the one thing I want to point out too, I'm not sure how far we're going to go down into the list, but
yeah, we're going to jump
the first 17 that we have listed, the projections were not within 50 at bats of what they actually reach. And that's something I was talking about with Bubba before, is I added a column just to see, okay, if we wanted to go down this route, but it was, if we filtered on players who were within 50 at bat error, whether it's positive or negative, those are the ones that we can see. Okay, the projection was relatively correct with the playing time, but the production was way off for whatever reason. Yep. In the case of Doyle and Profar, they were way under projected in the playing time. And I think that's why they're at the top of this list right now of biggest rank differentials. And Doyle had 542 at bats. Not sure how many play appearances. That's pretty good. That's basically full year. Mm-hmm. And kind of with Profar, if we were to look at his Doyle's Seamer 600, it kind of, which puts everyone on 600 at plate appearance, even playing field, and kind of shows skills. He had 14 homers and 18 steals projected in 400 at bats, roughly. Add a third to that is what he actually produced, and that's 19 homers, that's 30 steals. So it's not really far off. It's, I think in this case with Doyle and maybe Profar, it's just the playing time was off. The skills were there. So that's something maybe I need to incorporate Seamer 600 a little bit more. But I've heard people mention that they don't really want to mess with projections except for playing time. I don't know. I was scared off of Doyle because of the strikeout issues, and he still struck out a 25% clip this past season. But he's so fast, and he plays in cores, so I think that's why his average was ended up being a positive contributor. It's just interesting to see that the skills were there. It's just that the at-bats kind of suppresses value. And then the average. I mean, average is one of the – it's probably out of these five stats, one of the ones that's most hard to predict. Yeah. And he completely flipped his value there. So that's what I see with Doyle. It's unfortunate I didn't draft him anywhere because he would have been very helpful.
Yeah, it's a good point. We'll talk about the ones that were within range because that keeps it interesting. I just want to name off some names for right. listeners, and then we'll get to some of these in a minute. But in those top 17, it went Profar, Doyle, Jackson Merrill was third, Burleson fourth, Kelton Cowser fifth, obviously because mostly he'd start the season with the Orioles, Luis Garcia of the Nats, Brent Rooker, Bryce Terang, Zach Neto, Connor Wong, J.J. Bladé, Eugenio Suarez, Matt Chapman, Jose Caballero, and his bad batting average, but all the steals. Michael Bush and Mason Winn. These are all guys that I know Ryan and I and other shows have talked about as being kind of the values in ADP. This checks out. Oh, and Jake Cronenworth. Sorry, there's one more. Jake Cronenworth rounds out the first 17 that didn't meet the or have a bigger gap than 50 plate appearances, which could obviously help you in your rankings. So let's talk about the first player that pops up here. And this is good because I know we talked about him on your recap show. That's Jock Jams. Jock Jams comes in here. He's the first one within 50 plate appearances projected. He projected at a ranking of 171, finished 85th at the position. At the hitting spot, 105th differential in ranking. And it's pretty crazy because it wasn't like he crushed, but was pretty good everywhere. It was like five more runs scored, four more home runs, three fewer RBIs, five stolen bases, like just enough everywhere. So what are your thoughts when you saw Jock Jams get quite the boost here, especially for a platoon bet?
Yeah, the platooning really comes – is what I first thought of. And just – so you mentioned the differentials. That comes out to a 5 MAE, which is very low. It's one of the lower ones. And this is kind of going back. So Jock was projected to be the 171st hitter. He ended up being the 85th with the MAE of 5. So he wasn't really that far off from his projections, just that the environment suppressed it. And he actually had fewer at-bats than he was projected for. He was projected for 378, and Jock only had 367. And this kind of goes into what I was saying last week or the week before with trying to avoid these platoon bats. It's just that I think Jock played the entire season. I don't remember him missing time or being hurt at all.
No, he didn't. He wasn't hurt. I can remember, and I did daily shows 5 days a week. I don't remember talking to Jock once. So, yeah.
Yeah, he played 132 games. He walked 55 times, but that's barely 400 plate appearances that he hit, and he was a full-time player as a platoon bat. And that is kind of, I guess, that supports my take of trying to avoid them, at least in drafts next season. But I knew Jock was good when I saw him on free agency. It's just that this is a good example of the issues with platoon bats, and also this how he wasn't really much better than projections thought, but he was just so much better because of how bad everyone else was, I guess, is a good way to put it.
For sure. I'm going to skip the next two. Just going to say something real quick, though. Jordan Westberg you got Brandon Marsh, Jordan Westberg, and Brendan Rodgers. All guys missed time on the IL, still were within the 50 plate appearances, so projections are already down on them, which I guess we want to say sometimes when we don't believe playing time and projections, they kind of nailed it. Even like, obviously they don't predict the injury part of it, but they didn't predict him to play the whole season as well. So there's something to that, but I think we could all agree Westbrook would have played probably the whole season, barring something crazy. Same with Brendan Rodgers for sure. Let's get down to this one. Next on the list here that did meet the 50 plate appearance discussion, Andrew Benintendi. This dude, I know he was a fun topic of conversation late in the year. I kept staring at him in the meatball draft and just couldn't pull the trigger. I wanted to. His preseason projected ranking 140, finished 166. Ranking differential says 67, though, Ben. Am I reading something wrong there? What do we got? That's like your differential.
Oh, that was score. My ranking. Sorry.
Yeah, sorry. Oh, sorry. Okay.
I can, my bad.
No, that's fine. But I still want to discuss him, though, because he still was, that's still 16 points in the opposite direction, but a guy that actually finished with 10 more homers, but 20 fewer runs, 9 more RBIs, 20 fewer runs, 8 fewer steals, the projections, but he had 10 more home runs and 9 more RBIs. So Benintendi, to me, it's an interesting discussion point because he disappointed in two areas. Runs, he's on the White Sox. It's kind of something we maybe expect in conversation, but then he still produced in the other column. So what's your thoughts when you see something like this? You know, in the end, with down offense in general, is 26 positions really that big? Probably not. But what are your thoughts on Benintendi here?
Yeah, so that's my bad on this. But it kind of aligns with the ADP at least, because my ADP rank and my rank were very similar.
Yeah.
So we can at least go down that route talking about Benintendi here. And he was being drafted in 365 was his ADP in the main event. But it's funny. So his MAE was kind of high, even though if you look at it, he's kind of in the same range. It's because he scored a bunch fewer runs, 20 fewer homers, but he had 10 more homers than he was projected for, stole fewer bases, and he actually hurt your average. So he had the opposite issue of Doyle. He was projected to be a batting average asset, Benintendi, but he actually was pretty bad. I think he hit like 220 or 210 or something like that. And I don't know if I'm still not going to be interested in him. I mean, maybe in the DC, but it's just funny to see how he was still valuable. It's a 166th hitter is – so there's 14 hitters, there's 15 teams. So, yeah, he was worthy of playing in a 15-teamer, which is wild to say, and borderline in a 12.
I was streaming him in 12s for the last few weeks of the season. Yes, it was a thing. I want to mention another giant here because I want to highlight the fact that these guys are actually somehow fantasy viable, and that's Michael Conforto. And if you look at the projections, he missed a little time, but still – his projected rank, his actual rank, were only 46 different, which is not, which is pretty good. He finished as the 150th hitter in baseball. He's like 13 in front of Yaz or 12 in front of Yaz, whatever it was. He had 5 more home runs, almost, he had 1 fewer runs, almost identical, but he had 10 more RBIs and 3 fewer steals. So more power production, run production from Conforto than originally projected. Still, overall, I think a pretty good season. But when you look at him, anything stand out to you there? Because he's going to be a free agent, so who knows where he lands. But for fantasy-wise, he did what he was supposed to do, basically.
He's a clone of Yastrzemski.
Yeah, it's almost – that's why I thought it was interesting when I clicked on it when you were talking about Benintendi. I'm like, huh, that's pretty interesting to me.
Yeah, Conforto is one of those – he's definitely a streaming bat, because if the Giants have – or wherever he ends up going, they have three rides in the schedule for maybe the half of the week. You add them, but – yeah, this is as boring as it gets, Conforto, and I don't know. He never really lived up to those expectations that he had when he was on the Mets. It seems like I think injuries really hurt him a lot, though, because he had a couple good years, but I feel like the decline hit him pretty hard.
Yeah. You mentioned the Mets. Let's talk Brandon Nimmo, who his projected ranking was 69. His actual ranking was 52. You had him ranked 106. If you want to talk on that, you're more than welcome to. But even though, like, based on your ranking and the actual ranking, we saw a 54 pick ranking differential. Just on projected ranking versus ranking, we saw 17. Dude had 4 more home runs. Like, I thought, I just didn't think he's a power hitter. I thought 19 homers was crazy. It wasn't. 67 RBIs projected, finished the season with 90. He had 10 more stolen bases, same amount of runs scored. And I was surprised. Batting average wasn't great, but everything else is pretty good for Brandon Nimmo. So when you look at this one, this stands out as a guy that really got it done in a few ways.
He did. And I was even ahead of main event ADP. So he was the 122nd hitter being drafted in the main event. I was 16 spots ahead of it. And I did not, when I had, I didn't draft one. No, I take that back. I took him on one team, Nimmo, and on DC. But if he had that averages to be average, like league average, he would have been even better than 52nd overall hitter. And I think a lot of that's the 15 steals. He beat his projection by 10. And I never took Nimmo to be, well, you always want him to be to steal more because he hit leadoff and then it kind of made sense. And he seems like he's fast enough. It's just that he's older now. And ironically that he finally tripled his projection steals. And it's pretty impressive. The runs were spot on, 88 to 88. And the at-bats are only off by 15 for what the three sources were projecting. And he, I think he's battling plantar fasciitis right now or something like that. So he's kind of, he's really slumped hard, but, and that average kills. He was kind of the, I forget who the first one we talked about was. He was, he was one of the ones where he was projected to be a contributor in average and he completely hurt your average.
Yep.
And those things hurt. Hopefully you have some in the other direction when you draft your team where you kind of have a Brenton Doyle that kind of balances out. Because if you had Doyle and Nimmo, they're projected for Nimmo was the projected good average hitter. Doyle was going to be the sink, ended up being the opposite. And that's why projections are good, because they're never going to be 100% accurate. Like, I don't think anyone has a zero MAE, but you may get a player who overperforms to balance out an underperformer. And hopefully over across your 14 players, you are kind of right with the average of all of them together. And I think those two are a good example of that.
No, so it's a great way to look at it for sure. Kind of offset each other and it worked out, and you know, pros and cons of the batting average. So it's like pitching ratios are difficult, hitting batting average, pretty much any ratio type stats can be tough to really, really nail down. We're going to go past these guys. I just want to mention Kyle Schwarber got it done in a big way. He finished very well compared to, he finished 17th at the hitting position, which is good. I'm going to jump down to Anthony Santander though, because he's projected for 562 plate appearances, had 595. You had him at 63. He was projected ranked 63. His ADP rank was 91 hitter wise, and he finished 25th. That's a pretty nice 38 differential there. He had 15 more home runs than he was projected for. That'll help. 13 more RBIs, 13 more runs scored. He actually stole one less base. It didn't even crush you in that regard. So Santander just destroyed the rankings or the projections compared. Like some guys we've seen, it's like one thing they destroyed, they struggled another, so on and so forth. Santander just crushed it all. So it's like when you see something like that, where do you go from here?
So I just pulled up his Statcast page, and it's not – honestly, Jerickson Profar had a better Statcast page than Anthony Santander.
Wow.
Just remembering how red Profar's was. There's definitely some blue here and a lot of mediocre red. It's like pinkish, maybe. It's a cross between pink and blue. So that's going to be something to consider when Santander gets drafted next year and when everyone's doing their research. I'm sure the projections are going to like him because he's always kind of been a 30. Once he broke out Santander, he's kind of been in that 25 to 30 homer range, I believe. And I didn't expect 44 homers when I drafted him in that main event. It's just he had solid run and RBI projections, and he definitely met those. It's just the playing time is nice because he's a switch hitter. And I'm not sure what the splits are, but I think they're fine enough where he'll play all the time. Yeah. It's just I'm glad I looked at this now because I have to be cautious when I go to rank them next year. Just don't get too carried away at the big season.
Yeah, there will definitely be some outliers. There's no doubt about that. Like another one, Josh Naylor, you might say is an outlier. You had him at 62, ADP had him at 75. Projections had him at 56 before the season. So finished 31st. He outproduced all of those for a nice 31 or a 25 gap there. 9 more homers, 15 more runs. 24 more RBIs. He hit driving to 108. That helps a ton. 2 fewer stolen bases. So what are your thoughts when you look at Mr. Naylor here, who many have talked about already, but quite the season, especially in the RBI department?
This one stings, Bubba. So I was ahead of ADP, and I look at projections, obviously, and I did not draft Naylor on one team. And
that's not – yeah, that does sting. I can see where that stings.
Yeah, projections were saying he has a value, and I just didn't So I was more in on Torkelson because I like the power profile more from first base. Naylor was only projected for 22 homers and a high average. So if you needed that at that point in the draft, it makes sense. And I also was a little scared of his low run projection, which is only 69. It's the same as Tyler O'Neill, who's going 100 picks later. And Naylor did score 84 runs, which is good for him. That's probably the top of what he'll score because he's not fast. You know, he does steal bases, oddly enough. And it's like the average, it's weird. So he was a better hitter, but his average was a lot worse than what he was projected to help you with. He was basically league average and average, which is fine. It's just that you were hoping for a boost, and hopefully, like what we talked about with Nimmo, your other players kind of picked up the slack there. I mean, no complaining from Naylor. He was a top hitter. It's just funny to see how things shake out when you get the projection and you just look back I don't know. Like, I took advantage of the Marte. Marte was probably a similar player as to Naylor, where the projection was much higher than the ADP and everything. It's just that I need to try to be a little more mindful of looking at these differences, I guess, going into next season.
Yep. No, it's the things we have to think about, because it does get quite interesting. And it's one of those also you wouldn't be shocked if it reverts back the other way. It's just like, what do you do with it type scenario. I got to see it a few times before I believe it. It's a conversation many will have. But I'm going to scroll down to some guys that finished kind of close to neutral here before we do the MAE part of it. I want to hit on Yordan Alvarez, because he was a headache for many because of the injuries. But if you look at Yordan, this is what's interesting to me. You had him at 15. ADP is the 13th hitter. Projections had him 11. He finished 14th at the position, so a -3 in that regard. But one better than yours, so pretty much similar. But like preseason, he was projected for 514 at-bats. He had 552. I think most people thought he like barely played. It felt like he was out so much type conversation. He still outproduced his projection of at-bats by nearly 40, 38. So that's a big boost in my thoughts. He only had four fewer home runs, which is interesting. A lot fewer RBIs and a lot fewer runs scored. So when you look at Yordan Alvarez, I guess I just wanted to highlight it because he's a guy that we take early and people are worried about health and whatnot. But in the end, got the at-bats. Production still was not what the projections say, but he got the at-bats is, I guess, where I'm going with this.
Right, and he hit over 300, so his average pushed his value back up to kind of where it was. And it made up, so he was only three spots off of what the projection had him from 11 to 14. And I think he's still kind of going in that second round range for 15s right now in the early DCs. So there's not really much of a discount. I think if he hit 270, there may have been one, but yeah, the runs and RBI seem fluky to me. I think he still gets hit 40 homers, which is kind of surprising, but I mean, he's still young enough where he could break out and hit like 45 or 50, but yeah, it's good that he played the full year. I don't know if he had any injury things in spring training. I feel like he always does, Yordan, but yeah, I mean, if I can get a steals guy before him in drafts, I would definitely be fine with him as my second round pick again.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, he had a ADP round 20 right now, so he's still, you know, mid second round.
He's being slept on still, it feels like.
So yeah, that could be quite interesting. All right, let's flip it to the MAE. Well, give me the proper something average error, right?
Mean average error, yeah, or mean absolute error. So
because mean is average. Even I know that. Yeah,
mean absolute error. It doesn't care if you're above or below your projection. It's just seeing how far away from it you are.
And this is where I think I've learned to maybe take more out of stuff here, because then you can really get an idea of how accurate the projection was. Am I reading that correctly? In theory, their production versus the projection. So. Some of the early names here, we won't go over all of them. I'll highlight a few we'll discuss. But like the person with the lowest MAE of one, the only player with one was Gavin Lux, who a lot of people got frustrated with at times. Like he had good runs and then it kind of fizzled out to the end. Still basically met his projection for the most part. Like he's projected for almost 400 at bats, got 439, projected for 10 homers, hit 10 homers. 50 RBIs, 58 runs, 59 runs. Like, this is the dude. This is who he was. So that was interesting to me. But let's talk Nick Castellanos, someone that disappointed many, Ben. His MAA was 2. What are your thoughts on what we saw from Casty? Because he's a conundrum every draft season.
Yeah, I didn't have him, but I don't know why people are upset. He was within six runs. He was within a homer. He was within two RBI. He had only one fewer steal, and the average contribution was roughly the same as what he was projected for. It's maybe how he got there. Maybe he's – I don't have his breakdown, but let me see if he had a up-and-down season, because, I mean, that could definitely cause –
I think it was a roller coaster ride, if I remember correctly, yes.
Yeah, let me pull up the splits by month. Castellanos, he had – yes, well, he started out awful in April. He had a 5.1 OPS in April, followed by a 7.09 in May, but then he was almost 800 or higher the last 4 months of the year. And he was pretty consistent. He had two homers in April, five in May. He had four every month after that, in the mid-teens in RBIs, except for April. The runs kind of varied a little bit, but the average from June on was 276 in June, 275 in July, 275 in August, 292 in September. And that got his season line up to 254, which wasn't far off from the projection in terms of the weighted value. And I think, yeah, so he was a safe, boring picket, it turns out.
Yeah, no, it's interesting looking at it that direction. That's why I think I like this MAE, because it makes you look at him and go, maybe it was not as bad as we thought, because there was a lot of negative discussion surrounding Nick Castellanos at times. But you just mentioned his month by month, and you know, after the slow start, like, that was a consistent dude. He's plugged into your lineup and should have been pretty happy with, especially in a 15. Like, in a 12, you can maybe have streamed something along those lines if you think you can get lucky. But in a 15, that's a pretty solid situation right there. So I like that quite a bit. We'll skip down a few more here. I like seeing Travis d'Arnaud's name on here. That is pretty plus in my mind. But
there's a lot of catchers who are very close.
Yes, a lot of catchers that are very close. Even Will Smith. If you'd like to talk for Will Smith, you're welcome to. Otherwise, we can move on.
I'll just say, for all the fun that you and Ryan had, he was basically what people drafted him for.
Yep.
97th ranked or projected hitter, he was 94th projected. And this is without a catcher adjustment. It's just on the raw totals.
And I did, if anybody has not listened to our catcher review on Bubba and the Bloom, I did admit that he finished well, and it was great. But I stomaching the 3 months or so of just dreadful production would have been very difficult for me to do. And if you listened all season, you know I couldn't have. So that solves that problem. But yeah, he finished very – I was very impressed by the overall numbers and all things were said and done.
MAE of three for those.
Sorry, yes, MAE of three. So we skip most of the twos because it's like Connor Joe, Nick Gordon, Blackman, yeah. Kiki Hernandez, stuff like that where, yeah. You know, not – I'm looking for bigger names that people are fantasy. Like Giancarlo was an MAE of three. That's even more telling. But let's talk Taylor Ward. Because this is a player that started out great, struggled in the middle, honestly finished really well. I remember writing them up in Fab articles towards the end of the season. A really strong finish to the year. And if you look at the MAE, it was a three. Now, he did not meet the plate appearance thing at bats. Like you mentioned, he had 100 more at bats in the regular season because he actually stayed healthy this year. I just wanted to highlight him, though, because – and maybe this skews the MAE also. Maybe it screws up the whole conversation here. But – the fact he produces, yeah, he wouldn't have been this close if he would have had 485 at bats. I get it. But I still think it's pretty interesting that he's here because he finished the year pretty darn strong. But I will already take a step back, realizing 100 at bats will help with the counting stats here.
Yeah, it will. So kind of going back to the Seamer 600, if you looked at that, would probably project for better skills, but he was close to 600 at bats and he was basically what he was for 100 fewer projected plate appearances. And I think we talked about him at the end of the season, Ward. And yeah, he ended up finishing strong. I didn't have him anywhere, but feels like he was drafted kind of. He actually finished well above where his ADP was and where I had him ranked. So he was past 100 for my rankings and NFBC main event ADP. And he beat both by roughly 50, I think it was 40, 50. And yeah, so a good year for Ward. Was one of those boring players. He's definitely better in 15s.
Similar to Castellanos, this next player made a lot of people angry, especially by the end of the season. But then if you sit back, and it's like the one thing I like to tell a lot of, you know, people that DM me or message me in my chats and stuff about, like, should I drop so-and-so, should I do this? And I'm like, if you're in a roto league, head-to-head, this is a different story. Head-to-head, this could be rough. If you're playing roto like Ben and I do and many others, this is where projections are great because you just want the back of the baseball card by the end. That's all you want. You don't care how they get there. That's what you want. And this player finished with an MAA of three. Yeah, he was your 27th ranked player, ADP was 25 hitter, 41st projected hitter by projections, finished 43rd at the position, so almost dead on the projected. And if you look at it, he was projected for 81 runs, scored 79 of his own, projected for 16 homers, hit 20, actually. He's projected for 62 RBIs, drove in 65, projected for 37 steals, stole 31. Ben, this player is C.J. Abrams, who by about, I'll say August, might have been in July, people were ready to cut from their teams. And this man, in the end of the, by the end of the season, was who we thought he was. So what's your thoughts here?
Well, not quite, because if you were high on C.J. Abrams, you were
hoping for steals.
2080 yeah. or something like that, 2060. Yeah.
But the projections, he was there.
Yeah, the projections were like, nope, you guys are a little crazy. He's this guy. And I didn't draft Abrams because of this. Like, the projection didn't buy into where his ADP was, and he was more of like a – so that's a third-round ADP, 35.49 is what the actual ADP value was. He was probably like a in the 50s or 60s, I'd have to guess, in terms of that hitter value when you account for pitchers as well. But, I mean, the projection isn't trying to tell you the story of what actually happened where he starts out slow. It's just that based on his skill level, he's a solid player, but until he shows something else, he's not going to be Ellie, which I think is what people were hoping for with the high steal total. I mean, which did make sense. Abrams stole so many in so little time the year before, it seemed like. It's just that with the young player, I mean, they still have to grow. It's not just going to happen. They have to like actually do it. And the projection, of course, this is one projection. There's tons other that were wrong. It's just, it makes you stop and think if you see a player like this where it seems like they're getting overdrafted. It makes you really, if you do the sort of thing, it makes you dig into them a bit more and reconsider drafting them there.
Yeah, and that's one thing I love about the projections, rankings, all things that, like, talk about the Bloom boards, makes you dig in and think more. That's kind of the purpose of all these things, kind of see what's right and what's wrong. And one of the things Ben said there at the beginning, like, he uses his projections, he sticks to them, and his projections didn't agree with a lot of people's rankings, and that his projections had him here, and that's why he didn't draft him here, because this is the numbers and blah, blah, blah. Like, there's levels to this stuff, as people say, and that was the PG version of it, and this was the levels to it. There is a lot of people had him as a second-round player if you looked at the rankings and projections. In the 15, he's more of a late third-round player, and you weren't getting him there. So that's just the reality of the situation. Jake Berger, almost dead on the nuts as well, which is very entertaining. He had an MAE of 3, 29 homers projected, 29 homers hit, 535 at-bats. That's pretty entertaining to me. Rowdy Tellez, for anybody keeping track at home, was dead on. Same with Patrick Bailey. A lot of these guys weren't the big names that were dead on, but I wanted to find, where did he go? Let me just do the old control F, because we talked about it at the beginning of the show. Okay, his MAE was 5, but this one was very interesting to me, and that was Ian Happ, Ben.
Yes.
I wanted to discuss him for a second here, because you had him at 76th hitter, ADP had him at the 110th hitter, so you did like him. Projections had him at 76, so you guys were simpatico. He finished 42nd hitter. That's a 34 differential there. He had 5 more home runs. He had 9 more RBIs, 9 more runs scored, 2 more stolen bases. And I wanted to bring it up because we talked about it before the show. Ian Happ just seemed like one of those boring players that we knew was producing, but he wasn't like lighting the world on fire. But then you come back and you sit back, and this is why I love this exercise. You look at this and go, he was really good, like really good compared to the rest of the landscape, which you started the show discussing. This kind of brings it full circle. Players like this stand out a lot. So if you got anything on Ian Happ, like, I wanted to bring him up here for a minute.
I didn't like Josh Naylor. I did not draft Happ, even though I was ahead of ADP on him. I think it must have came down to that range. I was just looking for pitching or catching in that spot in the draft. So maybe I have to be a little more creative with my draft strategy next season, but that's not time for this. with Happ, he's a boring 15 type player, but he had value in 12s. He was a top 50 player by a top 50 hitter by my ranking, at least. And I'm sure Razzball Fangraphs would probably be the same, especially when you're almost at 90 with 25 and 13. And his average was below average, but it didn't really kill you. So no harm there. It's just, he's one of those guys that never really gets talked about except for maybe like a deeper show, but he's definitely not a flashy player. It's just, these guys are valuable, especially in a 15 team, are the ones that you can rely on to just do what the projections are saying they're supposed to do.
I guess I'll do my due diligence here. We highlighted C.J. Abrams. So let's highlight Nico Horner.
Who, I wanted to mention him.
Yep. So you had him at 43. ADP, he had him as the 44th hitter. Projections had him as the 32nd hitter. Finishes the 56th hitter. but had an MAE of 4. So big gap in the rankings, but in the end, wasn't that far off from the projection. He was, but he wasn't, if that makes sense. Like he had 2 fewer steals, 3 fewer home runs. It was just a little bit here and there. So what do you have on Nico Horner?
He really came through with the average. I don't have the actual totals, but the weighted average was only off by 1, and it was a very high number. And the steals were off by 2. I mean, they were dead on. They gave him actually even more power, 3 more homers for Nico than he actually hit. And so the average made him worth his ADP, but I remember everyone saying that nobody wanted a 0 in power at that point in the draft, and I didn't really either. I didn't draft Nico. I thought he was more in line with the Bryson Stott range, Andrés Giménez, all those middle infielders who were going much later than Nico, because they were all low homers, high steals profiles. The difference is that Nico actually came through with the average, and that's kind of where he ended up being valuable. From like a roster construction standpoint, I don't know if I'd still want to take Nico. I mean, with the way middle infield was, you're alluding to how bad shortstop or how much better shortstop was in second. I think Nico's second base eligible. Yep. He'll probably be drafted relatively highly next year. I'm not sure what the ADP is right now, but yeah, it's still though, I don't want to draft someone like that early. I think it's, but the value's there. It's just, I guess it depends on how you want to build your team.
Horner's ADP is 154 right now.
Oh my, that's a huge buy. Cause
yeah,
wow.
That's interesting.
Wow. Hope no one listens to this podcast.
Yeah. That 154 is interesting. Like, I didn't expect to see that number there when I just typed
that. That's wild.
Again, only 2 drafts. It's only 2 drafts, but
right.
It's smart people drafting in those leagues.
Yeah. It's
too.
The crazies.
Yeah. So that's interesting to see those kind of numbers, thrown out there, one might say. A few others that are interesting. Jeremy Pena disappointed many, it felt like, but still, he had an MAE of 4, wasn't that far off from his projections. Projected ranks 91, you had him 128, finished 49th. That's pretty good, all things considered. So Pena's one if you want to discuss. A few others. I'll throw some names out. You can highlight whoever you'd like to highlight. In the end, Wyatt Langford was actually good. Riley Green was a guy I was going to mention before, but I waited here because I saw he had an MAE of 5. He finished as the 61st hitter off the board, which is pretty impressive, all things considered. So if there's anybody you'd like to discuss, the floor is yours on this.
I was high on Riley Green early. I took him in my first draft, and then I kind of got scared off because no one else really liked him. And that team ended up cashing. It was I wish I had Green on more teams. He really helped with the average and the power. The speed still isn't there. I think he's supposed to be fast, but for whatever reason, Green isn't stealing. Langford, he's interesting. He was projected to be the 100th hitter. ADP had him at the 41st. I had him at the 123rd. I just ranked him more so I wouldn't draft him, Langford, and he finished in the middle at 64. And I've seen people, I think Smada has been tweeting about how Langford's ADP is not going down at all. It's
80.5 right now.
Yeah, and so Langford, people are still in on him because he did finish strongly. And who else did you? Oh, Pena was okay. He's more of like this, the most boring projection, but he came through. I think at that point in the draft, I was looking for a little more upside than what Pena provides, and 15 and 20 is actually good. I didn't expect 20 steals out of him. But he also helped a lot in that. He kind of doubled his average projected contribution, which helps his ranking be a lot higher than he ended up was projected for.
Yep. Most definitely. All right, Ben, is there anything else you'd like to mention about the projections before we have a couple listener questions we can discuss, but anything else on the projections that the listeners should know?
I'll do one thing real quick. So I'm going to filter on at bats within 50 and just list off names of who had the biggest MAEs. So number one, Judge, he completely crushed his, so it's basically the first round. It's Judge, Witt, Ramirez, and J-Rod. So of course, those first three names were all outperformers. J-Rod was within 50 at-bats of his projection, and he was the fourth highest MAE, but that's the bad direction. Jake Fraley is at the top of the list. I drafted him in a main event, and I'd regret it. Oh, Randy's eighth. Everyone knows about Randy. His average completely tanked, and he was 70 spots lower compared to his projection. Goldschmidt is one. That's no surprise, I'm sure. Corbin Carroll, of course, Olsen, Jordan. No names that really are too surprising. You mentioned Gelof before. Glaber's up there. Duvall, Haniger. So nothing too surprising. It's just it's good to see it quantified, I guess.
Yeah, no, it does make things a little different. There's no doubt about that. At Judge, Witt, J-Ram.
Lindor was a positive gainer, of course.
Yeah, that's interesting to see all those that just really absolutely – but it's like you said, it's nice because they're within the at-bats range that makes it look like, okay, I could actually trust these type situations. So
yeah, these are guys that just had better skills or worse skills than they were forecasted with the plate appearances being there.
Ben and Dendy, man. Ben and freaking Dendy.
Fifth in the list.
Yes, that is just unbelievable. Mitch Garver's on this list somehow. That's something else. But
he was only off by 40 at-bats roughly.
Yeah,
but so he did nothing.
Did nothing. Absolute garbage. -211. If you guys really want to know the difference in rankings there, but yeah, there's some other guys. Yeah, Santander, like you mentioned, Torres. Like there's some Alec Bohm's even on the list. That's a guy that's very, I wouldn't say controversial is the right word, but a lot of discussions around Alec Bohm when it comes to what to do with Alec Bohm.
So he was interesting. Fun. He his runs and homers are very close. It's just that the RBIs were so much higher. He had 23 more RBIs. Yeah, that's really what set his value apart. And that feels fluky to me because RBIs, look at Jordan. He was 20 below his projection. Yeah. And
remember 2 years ago, Jonah Heim, 2 years ago, Jonah Heim had over 100 RBIs. And look, we're ended up. That reminds me right now, just thinking, you said Cal Raleigh's name, I think, if I remember correctly.
Oh, actually, let's see where he is. I'll look
him up. Because
he was actually outside the at-bat.
So that's what it was. Okay, because he's another guy that had a huge jump in like the RBI department that could make it interesting.
Do you have him? I'll look at his stats. Cal was projected for 465. He ended up getting 546 at-bats, 81 more at-bats.
Okay.
And 7 more homers, 27 more RBIs, 5 more steals, and 10 more runs. Everything, he basically improved everything except for his average. His average was slightly worse than the projection.
Yep. It's fun stuff looking at these in different ways. I do like the within 50 at bats because then it's like, okay, we could trust this. Or seemed that like Goldschmidt sucked and he was projected to kind of suck, but he sucked worse than his projection basically. So I guess he wasn't projected to suck. He just sucked.
No, it missed by a lot. He was the 36th projected hitter.
Yeah. So he wasn't even close on that one. But like Corbin Carroll, yeah. His is because he was projected to be so high and then it just fell off the map. That was the downside for him. Like in reality, projections had him ranked 9th. He finished 18th. Like it's only 9 spots, but when you're a top 10 hitter, that's a big difference compared to like 35th to 65th or something like that. That's a big difference.
Yeah. And I think one more thing I want to look at. So within 50 at bat error, the highest MAE we have is 20, 18, 16, 14. And then it kind of gets to 10. There's roughly 20 people with an MAE. Yeah. There's 19 with an MAE of 10 or higher. But then when you take out and you say no for the at-bats within that, I'm going to see what the difference is. So then you get massive numbers. So if you go to no for the at-bats, the highest MAE is 56, 40, 37. So a lot of the projection error is based on playing time. And that's hard to predict. That's injuries. It's like this being bad and then sitting. Or if you're a breakout, like a rookie, like Burleson, he had 374 more at bats than he's projected for. I think projections when the playing time is there, they're probably going to be pretty accurate. It's just getting the right playing time, I think, is what this is telling me at least.
Yeah, and that's what a lot of Ariel likes to do, a lot of playing time. You talk about like the robot and those guys, they tweak a lot of playing time when they'll use like an average of certain projections or whatnot, and then they'll tweak playing time in their models and so on and so forth. And that's like one of my discussions I have a lot is with young players. If you believe in the skills, it's like you try to look for, okay, do they get that bump in P? Like you mentioned Burleson. Now we think there's other guys that could do that. We thought Lankford would be that guy and he got hurt. So that might have something to do with it, but that's what, like Westbrook, he would have crushed it if he didn't get hurt in playing time, stuff like that. Those are the guys you're looking for. That's one thing I know. Like, here we go. Bringing it back. Catchers are always projected to have little playing time. Like, so if you can kind of navigate the platoon situations, you can move projections around when it comes to catchers. Like, that's the easiest position to do it with, in my mind. So there's a lot of different little angles like that. But, of course, I had to bring it home for a second there.
Always catchers.
Yep. Any final thoughts before we do a couple listener questions here? Because we could probably play with this this sheet all day long if we really wanted to.
Yeah, we barely scratched the surface on the number of players. But yeah, a good catch. I had the rank set up for my personal review last year. I missed that, this, but we corrected it on the fly pretty well. So thanks for catching that. And, I think it was a good exercise. And just seeing the at-bats play a big role in the error or the projection success is interesting to see.
Yeah, definitely an interesting situation there. Do you have a couple little at least one for sure. Yeah, one comment question here. Everybody, MS at SMMS79 says, Steamer was the first place I saw Britton Doyle pop in my top 2024 prep. And then he became a target because of his secure playing time with such a cheap draft cost. Any speculation on who might be in the similar boat in 2025? Haven't gotten that far yet, but and plus there's no projections to go off of in that regard. But anybody you can think of that stands out to you? I'm just scrolling down ADP real quick here.
Yeah, I'm looking at the best players from this past season to see. Well, I want to go a little bit deep in that because Doyle didn't finish too high last year. Let me see if I can find anybody.
One guy that's been a conundrum to me early in draft season is Lars Nootbaar because he missed so much last year. He's going at 261. I feel like he's a dude that's supposed to be better than that. But not sure he's Britton Doyle-esque, but could be someone in that ballpark.
I guess the type of player is somebody relatively young who didn't have the best rookie season. That's a tough one. Yeah, it's hard. I'm not seeing any names as I scroll.
Jordan
through.
Walker has an ADP of 305. If there's a lot of Jordan Walker believers in the world, that'd be one.
That's a good one. I think
Evan Carter at 312 is another one.
Oh wow, he really dropped.
He's one I would keep in mind. It's Evan Carter. Not just because I took him in the meatball draft, but for similar reason, like we had high hopes for Evan Carter, and now he's a post 380p. That could be a dude for sure.
Noelvi Marte, maybe.
Maybe that could be one as well. Definitely. So there will be some droppers. It happens every year. Then we talk about these like sophomore and junior players that break out and see where it goes. He also says, "How far does Nolan Jones fall this year before you need to buy back in?" That's a tough one. Right now his ADP is, oh man, that was not what I wanted to do. I did control F and someone's last name is Jones, so it's like in every column on the right. All right, I don't want that. Give me Nolan Jones. Okay, this is not, I guess I should just type in Nolan. There we go, that'll be a lot quicker. Idiot. Nolan Jones ADP of 276 right now. 276. I can probably buy in at 276. I'm just gonna throw that out there.
Yeah, without knowing ADP, I was gonna say post pick 200, and he's post pick 200.
Yeah,
the thing is that he's one of those platooners, though. He turned into a platoon bat. It's and so I'm gonna be cautious, even though he does play in cores, but he had the huge K rate, and I don't know if he's gonna platoon next year. We'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, you never know with the Rockies. That's the biggest problem in that regard is. How are they going to play next year? Because they don't usually doesn't follow the same trend as the previous year with the Colorado Rockies. But all right, Ben, we're going to wrap it up there. That was fun. I'm going to probably play with this chart some more this coming weeks to kind of maybe put some content out there in a roundabout way. Obviously, credit you in that regard, but there's some players that stood out to me when looking at this. But we'll play with that some more. And thank you for putting the chart together and all that good stuff. It's some pretty awesome work as usual.
Oh yeah, I think I did last year for myself, but then I realized once I was on the show a little bit, I'm like, hey, this would be good to talk about. And
it's good.
I mainly did this year just for the show, but my use was during the show and leading up to it. So hopefully it's something, I feel like it's something that you really want to look at, but hopefully the listeners were able to follow along with what we were talking about and got something out of it. I think it's, or maybe it inspired them to do their own similar exercise too.
Yep. There's definitely it should have been helpful in some regard. And if you have more questions, feel free to reach out. Let us know if you have any thoughts. You can check out Ben on Twitter at @BreakingBen_T. I'm at @BDentric, and we'll be back with you guys next week talking about who knows what, more fun stuff, getting ready for 2025, which is crazy to think about, but probably still 2024 thoughts before we get too deep into the 2025 weeds. But until next time, this was Bench with Bubba, episode 693. Catch you all later.